สะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะบุญังธัมมังสังฆังนมัสสามิ
This is a discourse where the Buddha is asked, what is the all, in the sense of, you know, what is everything? What is the sort of the kind of the all and everything? What is the universe? What is the so what encompasses everything?And the Buddha answers that the all is the eye, forms that are recognizable by the eye form. Through the ear, sounds that one hears through the ear.Nose and odors that are cognized through the nose, tongue and flavors that are cognized through the tongue, now the body, sensations that are cognized through the body, the mind, and what is cognized through the mind, that these six sense basesare the what constitute everything. So that rather than looking to the external world and the Buddha is turning it back to our own experience. It's like today,There was a shipment from Thailand arrived, this big crate that's sitting out in the yard came this afternoon, and the truck driver was interested in what we were. We were Buddhist and that it was a monastery, and so he was asking about what diddid Buddhism teach, and what he was really interested about was, you know, what is Buddhism teach about the origin of things, sort of the ultimate purpose of things, where do human beings come from, and.You know, basically, he wanted to know what is everything, what is the all. And tried to explain to him that there's really no end to that kind of questioning, and that there's what the Buddha really focused on was.Of the, you know, dukkha, suffering or dissatisfaction, unsatisfactoriness, its cause, its cessation, path leading to cessation. That didn't appear to be very interesting to this person. That was pretty useless. What would be more interesting is understanding the all, understanding everything. Where does it all come from? Where is it all going? And, you know, the Buddha was immensely practical. And it isn't, And that practicality wasn't just to, again, to be focused on the present moment, because that's all you can know anyway, which is true. But also that when we take that position of, you know, what is, you know, where do human beings come from? What's the beginning of the world? You know, fundamentally, you know, where it's coming from is, you know, what's the relationship of the all with me? Where do I fit into this? And where's my special, unique place in the universe? And the Buddha is really giving us the opportunity to have a tool, a handle, that will allow us to step back from the that sense of that I-making. That I-making, mind-making. In Pali, it's ahankara mamankara mananusaya. It's the I-making, the mind-making, and the underlying tendencies to conceit. And conceit isn't just sort of being puffed up with being better than everybody else, but the conceit of having a self-position, whether it's superior, inferior, or equal. Like there's no place for the sense of self that isn't going to be grounded in some kind of conceit of me. Because we can revel in the me that's really miserable as well, hopelessly inferior and pathetic. It's, at least it's something. But the Buddha's really trying to give us the tools to recognize that that's the fundamental problem. It's not the, you know, again, that sense of I and mine is, I mean, it's a natural part of human existence, but to understand how it's being made, because we take it as a given. This is a given, this is a reality. There's me, this is mine. This is who I am. And we need to investigate that assumption and try to understand how it's being created, how it's being made. And the one of the kind of primary ways to understand that is through the reflection investigation on the sense basis, because that is the doorway that we receive all of our experience, and that is all we experience. You know, all that we ever experience and ever will experience is form, sounds, odors, flavors, tangibles, cognized by the body, and mental phenomena through the mind. All of the rest of it is our own projection, assumption, and to be really, you know, really clear, because that's where we when we create suffering, where we experience happiness, it is through those, say, those avenues to be able to take that as a point of reflection and investigation. And one of the, say, primary means is to, certainly as a beginning and as a foundation, is to establish the restraint of the senses. Restraint in the sense that one is recognizing and attending closely, one is mindful of the forms cognizable by the eye, sounds cognizable by the ear, so on, through the six sense bases. One is attending to that carefully in a circumspect manner, so that one is not being drawn into the tendencies, the habits of liking and disliking, or that would normally give rise to the sense of desire or sorrow. Either the positive or the negative, in the sense of positive, which is fraught with desire or craving, and the negative in the sense that one is would be a source of irritation, aversion. So that one takes that sense restraint and working with the recognition, understanding of how we react, what comes up in the mind when we do see something that is interesting, is fascinating. How do we spin out on it? How do we shrink back out of maybe fear or worry? Oh my God, there's something else that I like. Ah, God. Sort of my purity and my peacefulness is completely compromised. Which is just another reaction, in the same way that seeing something that is interesting, attractive, is a source of desire, of lust, absolute obsession. Those are all the reactions. And they keep the mind spinning and keep us suffering. It doesn't just sort of spin benignly. It is definitely a source of suffering and dis-ease. To be attentive to a training in mindfulness and clear comprehension of what happens as we experience the world around us and the world within us. Because it isn't just the sense objects coming and attacking us from outside. It's also it's the world inside that we create as well. How we hold it, how we respond to it, how skillfully we are able to, or not skillfully, how we how it is interpreted. So that one of the images that the Buddha gives is of the they have a jackal and a tortoise, so that they, you know, the jackal sees this tortoise walking along, and comes up to it, and the tortoise immediately pulls its forelegs in, its back legs in, its tail in, its head, and it's safe, it's protected, and the jackal is there, sort of standing, waiting, and you know, as soon as this tortoise pokes anything out, I'll be able to grab it and take it off to for a meal. And the tortoise doesn't ever let anything come out, and doesn't fall for it. And the jackal just has to give up and leave the tortoise alone. So it's similar with the Buddha says with the restraint of the senses, by being composed, being restrained, being aware and attentive to the sense doors, then, you know, we don't fall for our own habits, foolishness, likes and dislikes. We're able to be composed, contained, and able to maintain that sense of safety. It's a refuge, having that restraint of the senses. Then restraint of the senses lays a foundation. It gives a steady base to be able to reflect and investigate our experience. And there, you know, it's been a tool that's been used since the Buddha's time. That has, there's a lovely kind of exchange of between a monk and a king. That's King Udena from one of the sort of outlying principalities, and this particular monk, Pindola Bhardwaja, he's gone off Tudong, he's gone off traveling and he's gone practicing in that region, and the king is kind of fascinated with, you know, how is it that, you know, as a you know, you're as a monk, you're celibate, renunciate, you know, how do you deal with lust, and how do you deal with desire, how do you deal with members of the opposite sex? And the monk sort of says, well, the Buddha's encouraged us to when we meet a woman who is, say, around the same age as our mothers, and to set up the perception that those are to treat them in the same way that we would treat our own mothers. Or if we meet a woman who is of an age that could be our sisters, then to look on them and perceive them in the same way we would our sisters. Or if they're younger, and to look on them as if they were our daughters. And the king listens to that and he says, well, maybe. And then, well, it's kind of a nice ideal, but I think there's most people probably wouldn't be able to be able to maintain that in the face of real desire. Kind of idealistic. He says, well, the Buddha also has us reflect and investigate the nature of our own bodies and nature of all other bodies as being composed of the 32 parts, and to really reflect closely and, you know, sort of hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth, skin, going through the 32 parts, which is the asubha gammatthana, and sort of gives that reflection to the king. And the king sort of listens and says, yeah, well, that's pretty good too. But said, you know, we're easily distracted, and you know, what appears to be unattractive in one moment can shift really quickly and turn into it's hard to maintain that. And then the monk sort of says, well, the Buddha also teaches us to establish restraint of the senses, whether we're on our own, whether with other people, whether we're in a forest, whether we're in a public area or in a populated area, in training in the restraint of the senses, really being attentive and clear of them when one experiences the sight, sound, smells, taste, touch, and mind objects, that we're very clear and then able to step back from the reactions of that would normally lead to desire or sorrow. And the king listens, that's the way that it can be done. That's how one can live without being swept up by desire. He said, I've noticed that myself. And whenever I go into the sort of the harem and the chambers, if I come back and I'm scattered, I lose it every time. If I'm composed and clear, then it's not so disturbing or distracting. And that has a great sense of faith. So the restraint of the senses is to understanding the sense bases is a protection and a means where we can really understand more clearly the processes of particularly desire, but similarly, and really any other permutation of how the mind proliferates or moves away from a base of clarity. Because in one moment, if we just establish awareness, and just if you just sort of holding, and it isn't a matter of holding the mind steady, it's just sort of recognizing right now what's this moment got, and everything stops, everything's still, everything's clear. But then, you see, it's so difficult to sustain that. So to understand what is it that keeps moving us from that base of clarity, of stillness, of that stability of the present moment. So that reflection, investigation, understanding of the sense bases, Anant, gives us that basic foundation for us to understand that, work with it. And as we become more skilled with that, and then there is a stability and firmness that is quite natural, and we're able to carry with us wherever we go, because whether we're by ourselves or whether we're in a group or engaged in activity, it's still the same sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, mind, objects that we experience. That's all that's happening. We tend to get swept up in if there's activity happening, and we get swept up in it, either through getting excited about it or getting averse to it, but we get swept up. Or if we're on our own, then it's either we get kind of swept up by the pleasantness of being on our own and enjoying solitude and stillness and silence, or we get swept up in some story that we're spinning out on, because we don't have anything else for our teeth to sink into, and sort of sink our. I can remember one time when I first in Thailand, I first set up a branch monastery of Wat Nana Chat, and it's along the border of Laos, and a very pretty area right along the Mekong River. There's some cliffs that go up, and then it's a lot of open rock and wonderful rock formations and little caves. But it's very marginal soil, so that the trees were scattered and there wasn't. But what it made was very quiet, and then there wasn't any farmland really, so that the villages were very distant, so it was very, very quiet. And remember this one particular monk who was really keen to come out and spend the rains retreat. I spent the first rains retreat there when we set it up, and then this monk came. And after being there for a while, asked him how his practice was going, and he said, "Well, I'm putting a lot of time into the practice." He said, "But it's really frustrating. There's nobody else to blame." So that the mind is still sort of cranking it out, but it's all internal. It's all focused inside, and that so that when one is again, whether one's in a group or in some place where there's things happening, people around them, we can always fixate one's attention and allocate blame or its reason because one's impinged on it. But even on our own in quiet places, we're still cranking it out. And so to be really aware of that, because it's just another sense door, and to be able to understand how that works, so we can come to a place of stability, steadiness. And that steadiness is not because everything's controlled, or everything is absolutely still, but it's because there isn't that creation of the me and mine, or the comparing between myself and others, and that I-making, the mind-making, the underlying tendency to conceit. In the time of the Buddha, there was a monk who was practicing in probably a group of monks, and they were living in the hills. It was a cave, and Sariputta was there. I remember Sariputta being in this discourse, because the monk is he's in this cave, and a snake falls down from the top of the cave and then bites him. That's a poisonous snake. He notices it, and he tells the monks to help carry him out to the front of the cave, so that he can, because they've been bitten by this snake, and this body's going to, die pretty soon. And Sariputta asks, well, how is it that you can, we don't see any change in your faculties. We don't see any worry, concern, any fear, any excitement. Seems to be no change in your faculties. And he said, well, whether there's change or not change, this snake has bitten me and I'm going to die soon. but it's because of that there's, I see clearly that all there is there's the eye and forms, there's the ear and sounds, and there's the senses and the objects of the senses. But because of that, there's no eye-making, no mind-making, no underlying tendency to conceit towards any of the six sense bases. So therefore, there's no change in my faculties. There's no. So they picked him up, took him out to the front of the cave, and then he died. But unshakable, unmoving, absolutely clear. So that understanding of the senses, leads to this, and again, it's not just sort of restraint of the senses. I mean, that's a foundation, but with that restraint, then one has to turn attention back and see how does the sense of self created? How is the issues of self created? How are these issues of the world? How is that created? How is sort of the all created? How is everything created? And it has a very simple base. Just that six eye and forms, ear and sounds. It has that simple base. Of course, in it gets all spun. woven into kind of the fabric of experience, and then we believe in it, we react to it, we cling to it, we reject it, we fear it. But in the end, all it is these arising and ceasing of experience. And to be able to recognize that we have the ability to see that clearly, to witness it, to realize that that isn't what we have to be, what we have to become. It's quite natural, it's ordinary for those experiences to be there, as long as we have the life force and have the faculties, then that's what we'll experience. But we don't have to complicate it through that I-making, the mind-making, and to creating the sort of the issues of self that are going to be a source of suffering. So the tremendous peace is there, and it's not the peace of I'm just making, is it not experiencing anything, but it's the peace of clarity, the peace of wisdom, peace of insight. To be able to take those very ordinary, very simple experience of being a human being with our faculties and learning, recognizing, understanding, and realizing that through that we're able to come to the sort of highest levels of insight and understanding, of freedom. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening.